And before we get started, let me tell you about today's sponsor, Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty creates luxurious skincare, beauty, and wellness products that are effective and affordable, and all products are vegan and cruelty-free. Lately, I've been using their Eyelash Boost Serum to strengthen my eyelashes. This summer, I had a couple of lash lifts before I went on my vacation and definitely noticed a difference in my eyelashes. They felt a lot more brittle, and I noticed more were falling out. So this product is a lifesaver because this is all about strengthening your lashes, and I have noticed a difference in the condition, the strength, and the health of my lashes since using this product. And I have to tell you about their perfumes. OMG, I am obsessed. Probably my favorite is Seven Summers. When I first put it on, it's like sweet, juicy pear and citrus, and then it kind of melts down into this vanilla, praline, lavender smell. And then finally, the base note is this warm, musky vanilla, which has just been so perfect for sweater weather, making me smell good and feel cozy. So if you need to stock up on effective and affordable beauty and skincare products, definitely give Dime Beauty a try. You know I love to save money, so I got you a discount code. Use code JOURNEY20 at checkout to save 20% off of your entire order, and anything over $49 ships for free. That code is in the show notes. Thank you to Dime Beauty for sponsoring today's episode, and without further ado, let's get started. Caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare. You got me going, 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 going. Hello and welcome back to The Journey, a self-care podcast going beyond beauty products. My name is Kelly. I am the creator and host. I am also a skincare YouTuber, and I am just a human being who's trying to learn every single day. And this podcast is about that learning journey because I want to talk about the origins of self-care today. Now, this is something I have been really curious about for a while. Where did the term self-care really come from? Because this is not a term that I grew up hearing at all. This has not been in my cultural zeitgeist for the majority of my life. Like, it really has only shown up on my personal radar around 2017. And I really kind of came into contact with this term through Instagram. Self-care was really something that was buzzing in the skincare and beauty communities at that time on Instagram. And so my relationship with the word, which I think is probably similar to many people's relationship with the word, it was really about how to take care of yourself, how to pamper yourself, how to treat yourself, how to relax. And it was often served to me in a very aesthetically pleasing type of way, like a beautiful warm bath with flower petals or a gorgeous bath bomb and beautiful, you know, body oils, or it was a really beautiful yoga and meditation practice with the cutest matching set and, you know, the coordinating water bottle. So that's how I became familiar with the term self-care. And it always seemed like it was attached to some type of product, to something that you needed to buy, or it was a way that brands were marketing their products to me. And that's really why I wanted to start the podcast, was to help spread a deeper awareness of self-care beyond the products that you can buy, or just beyond the idea of if you use this skincare product or this hair care, body care product, you will be taking care of yourself. And I really wanted to explore the deeper mental and emotional aspects of self-care. But only recently have I been diving into the true origins of self-care, and it is surprising. I would consider this to be hidden history, and I think that it is incredibly important for us to understand where the term self-care was born from, how it evolved, and how we can really honor its origins today in our own self-care practices. So today I want to walk you through a brief history of self-care. Now, much of my information comes from two articles that I really suggest that you look into. I'm going to link them in the show notes, and I'm also going to link some other resources as well. But I want to shout out Aisha Harris, who wrote The History of Self-Care, that is available on Slate, and the article The Powerful History of Self-Care and How to Honor It Today by Olivia Groves. These are exceptional articles that really dive even deeper into the history that we're going to walk through today. So let's start our timeline in the 1950s and the early 1960s. This is a time where the concept of self-care starts to emerge as a medical concept. And this is around the time where medicine starts to shift largely away from being patient-based to being person-based. This is where we see mental health, exercise, and healthy eating being used as preventative mechanisms that people can take, rather than just slowly relying on medicine to treat diseases. So self-care was really a jumping off point for healthcare. This was really the beginning of healthcare. And that's where I said the emphasis was really shifted upon the person rather than the patient. You take your preventative measures before you get sick and hopefully to prevent sickness rather than just waiting until you become sick to take some of the strain off of the healthcare system, but also to encourage a healthier population. So self-care was really a healthcare term in the 1950s, a little bit before that and into the 1960s. Towards the end of this period is when we start to see the idea of self-care shifting into the idea of taking care of yourself first in order to be able to fully show up for others. And this starts to take hold when self-care is prescribed to those who are in emotionally draining professions like therapists and social workers. Self-care was prescribed to them because it was a way to help them manage the high amount of stress that they were carrying from their jobs and as a way to manage and release that stress so that they would be able to continue to fully show up in their very needed professions. Now, as we move further into the 1960s, we start to see self-care take on another development. This is the time when self-care starts to be used as a corrective tool by women, folks of color, marginalized and poor communities, as a corrective tool to the racist and misogynistic and classist healthcare system. These folks felt unserved by the healthcare system. They were underserved, they were not believed, and they were misdiagnosed. And so as a way to combat that, they started to use their own methods of self-care to help with their medical care that they felt was completely inadequate at the time. So this is where self-care starts to become a radical act. And it's a concept that is embraced by activists in the civil rights and women's liberation movements. Self-care, as we understand it today, starts with these organizers, and it owes a large debt of gratitude to the Black Panthers, who used the idea of self-care to fight against systemic racism. The Panthers encouraged their members to acts of self-love, emotional, and mental well-being in order to stay energized and to take care of their community. The Black Panthers also recognized the lack of access to basic social services and healthcare for their communities, and that starts to move us into the early 1970s, because this is where the recognition of medical racism and self-care start to overlap, and the Panthers start free clinics, programs that addressed poverty and lack of access to healthy food for school children, and they really focus on holistic well-being of the Black community, focusing on medicine, food, childcare, and financial care. Through the Black Panthers, we start to see the idea of self-care as a way to keep the movement energized for social justice and to help people to avoid burnout despite the stress, trauma, and adversity that they were facing. But we also see the idea of self-care as a community-based, value-driven, and activism-supporting mechanism. As we move into the very late 1970s and the early 1980s, we start to see another term on the rise, and that is the term wellness. In our modern day, wellness and self-care really do seem to go hand in hand, but at this point in time, these two terms are separate. Self-care, as we've explored, is really about radical self-care, keeping yourself energized to keep serving your community or keep working towards activism. Wellness, on the other hand, goes back to the 1950s when we talked about a person versus a patient-based medical system. Wellness really starts when people are fed up with mainstream medicine and they're really seeking positive health rather than just a lack of illness. People are looking to enhance their health and happiness, and they're not getting answers from their doctors, and they start to explore alternative healthcare measures or alternative ways to live a healthy lifestyle. This is when we start to see the rise of yoga, healthy food, meditation, mind-body connection. Wellness is really rooted in the idea that our own bodies and nature, like ingredients from nature, are really the key to health and happiness. It's important to know that these concepts are not new. Here in the timeline, we're in the late 1970s, the early 1980s. The concepts of yoga and healthy eating are not new, but they are still, up until this point, considered extremely fringe. These ideas kind of came over with the counterculture movement of the 1960s, but it was still considered very strange. If you were like into eating healthy and like taking supplements or doing yoga, you were considered a weirdo. These are very, very fringe ideas that did not start to pick up any type of real like mainstream recognition or widespread use until this wellness movement in the late 1970s. This is when people start to be a little bit more open-minded to it and start to experiment with alternatives to mainstream medicine. And this is where we can really chart the rise of wellness in our culture to where it is today, which is a $4.4 trillion industry. And today, the concepts of wellness and self-care do go hand in hand, but I think it is important to trace back to the origins and roots in our culture and see that wellness is less driven by community and activism, and it is a more individually focused movement. Really, the idea of wellness is that you hold the keys to your health. During the 1980s, we see a counter to the rise of mainstream wellness in Audre Lorde. Audre was a Black queer feminist poet who carried forward the activist goals of self-care. One of Audre's most famous quotes is, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare." Audre's work shed light on Black and queer women within the feminist movement. She advocated for moving away from the very simple goal of equality of men and women to moving to equality within the feminist movement to include all women. Audre is a huge influence for Black LGBTQ voices on health and wellness. Although her work on self-care has mostly been recognized by marginalized communities, her contributions to the self-care space can't be ignored. As we move from the 1980s into the 1990s, self-care kind of loses its grip and starts to slip away. And we really do start to see the idea of wellness, a very individual-based movement, start to take rise in the 1990s. You especially see this with the fitness craze of the 80s and then especially into the 90s. And we see a rise on, you know, alternatives to Western medicine. And we do see a lot of emphasis on healthy eating. As we enter into the early 2000s, we see a mashup of self-care and wellness start to come to the mainstream. And one of the biggest events of this time is September 11th, 2001. This is a time of unprecedented collective trauma and of uncertainty. And this is really what turns people inwards. This is the time where we start to have more conversations about trauma and PTSD, and we see self-care coming back into the medical space, often being used by therapists and psychiatrists as complementary treatment and management to those suffering with trauma and PTSD. We also have another collectively traumatizing event with the 2008 recession. And this is where we again start to see a little bit more of a rise, especially in wellness, the interest in wellness, but also a little bit of self-care at the same time. But self-care as we know it can be traced back to 2016. This is the year that self-care as a search term rises. If you look at Google Trends, it is really wild to see that there's very little interest in the term self-care. People searching like, what is self-care? There's like nothing. And then in 2016, the curve starts to go up. And every year since then, the curve starts to go further and further and further up. What happened in 2016? Why were people so interested in self-care at that point in time? Well, there's really two big events that are happening simultaneously at this time that are turning people towards self-care as a way to manage their stress. We have the election of Donald Trump, which was a very tense, politically charged moment in the United States, but I think that some of that also reverberated around the world. We have the murder of Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, and the year before in 2015 of Freddie Gray and Sandra Bland, just to name a few. This is when self-care emerges as a method to deal with what is happening. We see self-care being used in articles on how to ignore the election that just occurred or how to take care of yourself in a time of uncertainty, political uncertainty. But we also start to see articles bringing back the original idea of self-care as a way to keep yourself energized, to keep working on your movement, to keep your activism going, to keep protesting, to keep showing up. This was a huge year for Black Lives Matter as well. And that is where the term self-care, I think, started to come back, was around the Black Lives Matter community and the activism that sprung out from these murders. But it also starts to get appropriated in other media as well. And this is where we see the collective rise of popularity in the term self-care. And where I really started to come into the idea of self-care around 2017, and where, if anything was ever appropriated, where brands and advertising really hijack the word in order to sell products to you in order for you to be able to take care of yourself. And that's where we arrive today, at the present moment in 2022. Self-care has been on a wild ride and it has been redefined a few times throughout its brief history. Today, we really do interact with the word self-care on a very individual basis. And while I will argue till I'm blue in the face with anybody who calls self-care selfish, I do understand why they interact with the word that way. Because self-care has become such an individual, inward experience. And the origin of self-care, especially the activist origin of self-care, when it really blossomed and evolved under the Black Panthers, that is not an individual act. You perform self-care so that you can be energized to go back out into your community, so you can share yourself with others, share your gifts, and make a difference. That inherently is not selfish. And I think as the term has evolved throughout history, that meaning has been erased a little bit for a multitude of reasons. But that is the origin of self-care that, for the most part, I don't see being honored fully yet. So when we reflect on the true history of self-care, you may be left feeling like, wow, my self-care, is self-care really selfish? I am not here to take anything away from anybody. Do not feel guilty about how you've performed self-care up until this point in time. That is not what this podcast has ever been about. Whatever your self-care practices are, keep doing that. But I want you to recognize that self-care is an individual act that ultimately needs to be turned outwards into our communities. So, how do we honor this history? What are you recharging for? What do you self-care for? How can you enhance your self-care to allow for yourself to get involved in something outside of yourself? And here's the thing, you might already be involved in community causes or activism already, and you're just not really recognizing it yet. So really think, it doesn't have to be super complicated. It can be simply, you know, community service that you do, or being on a council in your community, whatever it is that you do. What are you recharging for, and how can you enhance what you're doing so that you can show up even more fully in your communities, your causes, and your activism? So I ask again, is self-care selfish? It is not selfish when you take that best, refueled, re-energized self out into the world to make an impact for the good of others. And that is how you honor the true origins of self-care. Thank you so much for allowing me in your ears today. If you love the episode, please take a moment to share it with somebody who needs to hear the true history of self-care. If you share it on Instagram, please tag me at The Journey of Self-Care Podcast. If you're enjoying the show so far, I would love it if you would take one moment of your time to rate and review the show. If you're on Spotify, you can rate it with stars. It takes like 5 seconds. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can also rate it in 5 seconds or less with stars. If you have a few more minutes, it would be great if you could just write a few words, just a few sentences on how you're enjoying the show. It really helps other listeners find the show. I am so grateful that you are here with me today. You are doing an amazing job. Please keep going, and I'm sending you so much love on this journey. Bye.